All right, that's just the perfect opportunity to say most of the things we do around here are actually intentional, but there are plenty of things around here that are not. For example, giving perfect opportunity for our ninja worker of the year to show her skills by swapping things around at the last minute, but also where we ended up in John today. Not only could I not have planned this if I wanted to, but we are working our way through John, and the passage we ended up on today is perfect. But as of 3 weeks ago, it wasn't the planned sermon. It's because we had to change something later in the series that it actually got bumped up. And today we're in the chapter we're in, I would say completely by accident, but I don't believe in accidents. I believe for a reason. So if you want to follow along, we are going to be John chapter 13. This is going to be shorter than normal because we've got plenty more people to honor in this hour. But we're going to be looking at the beginning of the Passover. If you don't have a Bible and you would like one, feel free to take the one from the pew in front of you. If you have a Bible but you just don't want to flip through pages this morning, of course, all the verses will be on the screen. So John 13 starts like this. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that this hour, that his hour had come, remember we had seen this pattern so far through the book of John, that his hour had not yet come, then his hour was about to come, and now we are finally in the part of the book where his hour has now come. So knowing that his hour has come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. So John is saying, look, we are wrapping this up. And like any good pastor, he's just past the halfway point. He is wrapping up his sermon, his message to us, with 7 chapters left to go. But he is giving an overarching theme for what he's going to cover next. Jesus knows he's leaving, and he wants to communicate his love to his apostles, to the people who had been following him. So John is saying, everything I'm about to say falls under this umbrella. Jesus is leaving, and he wants to express his love. So that's what we're going to see in John chapter 13. Because it says, during supper, when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand, and that he had come from God, and knowing that he was going back to God, rose from supper. So they're sitting around. The Passover meal is upon them. They have sat around the table. They're having the Passover meal. This is what you've probably seen Leonardo da Vinci's painting of the Last Supper, which doesn't portray this very well at all, because they actually would have been reclining, sitting on the floor, not sitting at a table. But they are sharing this meal together. And Jesus knows, because what Judas is about to do, Judas is about to go betray him, Jesus knows this is his last meal. This is the last time he's going to be together with his disciples. And at a certain point in the meal, Jesus gets up. Now, the apostles, the disciples, have no idea what's about to happen. To the disciples, they were sitting around having a good time, and all of a sudden, the main guy looks like he's leaving. Like, this is not normal. This is not what they would have been expecting, because he gets up and he leaves the table, and everyone must have been thinking, "Wait, where is Jesus going? Do we need to leave too? Who's getting the check? What's going on? What's Jesus doing?" So, and Jesus lays aside his outer garments. He starts taking off his clothes. It says, and taking a towel, he ties it around his waist, and he pours water into a basin. And he goes around and he begins to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with a towel that was wrapped around him. Now, this is another one of those stories that many of us are probably very familiar with. So I'm going to ask you to try to think about what the disciples would have been feeling in that moment. They were there for a good meal, and Jesus is now playing the role of a slave, a servant, and washing their dirty feet. This would have been weird, to say the least. It would have made them uncomfortable. We were joking with the deacons a couple weeks ago about what it would be like to actually do a foot washing sermon and to actually do a foot washing as part of the service, have you all come up and have the deacons wash your feet. That would have been weird, right? Like, uncomfortable. It wouldn't have been out of the norm for them, because having your feet washed is something you would have done regularly as part of the culture at this period of time. But it certainly would not have been the rabbi's responsibility. It would have been a job for the servant, for the slave, not for the teacher, not for the one that everybody was there to see. So he begins to go around the table, and he's washing their feet, and he comes to Simon Peter, which we're going to see this twice. This is the first, but one of the things I love about John is I think he would have fit in here very well at West Middlebury. He is full of snark, and he seems to have this, like, contentious rivalry, not in a negative fighting kind of way, but almost like brothers pick on each other. He and Simon Peter seem to have this relationship where John's just taking every jab he can get at Peter. If he has a chance to take a shot at Peter, he's going to do it. And we're going to see it twice today. This is the first one. So he comes to Simon Peter and says, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" And Jesus answers him, "What I am doing, you do not understand now, but afterwards you will understand." Which, if Jesus, the guy I've been following, the guy who's clearly proven that he's smarter than everybody else for a long period of time, looks at me and says, "You're not going to understand this," that's the end of my talking for the conversation. I am now in listening mode to try to figure out what it is that I don't understand. Let me figure this out. Not Peter. So Peter says, "You'll never wash my feet." And Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you shall have no share with me." Peter's like, "No, absolutely not. I won't let you do it. This thing that I don't understand why you're doing it or what the purpose is or any of that, but I'm not going to let you do it." And he says, "Look, if you want to be a part of this, if you want to be a follower of me, even though it's making you uncomfortable, even though you don't want to do it, I'm going to ask you to do it anyway. If you want to be a part of what's going on here, you're going to have to choose to go and follow Jesus." So Simon Peter says, oh, I messed it up. He's right, I don't understand what's going on. "Lord, then not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." If saying no is the wrong idea, I'm going to say yes to everything. And Jesus says, "Look, if one who is bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but you're clean already. And you are clean, but not every one of you." For he knew who was to betray him, and that was why he said, "Not all of you are clean." So Peter just royally demonstrates he has no clue what Jesus is talking about, which is fine, because Jesus said from the get-go, "You're not going to understand this, but we're going to do it anyway." So he says no, he jumps in with both feet, it's all over the place. But then Jesus takes this opportunity as a teachable moment. He points out the fact that of the 12 of them, the 12 feet that he, 12 pairs of feet that he washed, one of them was not like the rest. But then he continues on and says, "When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments, got dressed again, and resumed his place at the table, he said to them, 'Do you understand what I have done to you?'" He says, by the way, the answer for Peter is no. "You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If then your Lord and teacher have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given to you an example, that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." Jesus says, "Look, I'm going to explain it to you." Clearly, Peter doesn't get it. I'm guessing the other 11 of you don't either, so I'm going to just lay it out for you. He says, "You call me Lord and Master. You call me teacher. You call me rabbi. You put me in these positions." And Jesus, I love it, doesn't mince words. He says, "And you're right. That's who I am." Jesus makes it very clear. "I am your Lord. I am your Master. I am the one that you should respect. And yet, I have stepped down. I have humbled myself." If you remember our Philippians series, he stepped out of heaven to come down to earth to live as a human being. He humbled himself to live amongst us as one of us. He says, "If I, the Lord and teacher, can do that, can humble myself to the point of not just living as a human being and dying as a human being, but living with you and washing the horse poop off of your feet, He says, how much more so should you guys be able to do that for each other? How much more so should you guys be able to set aside your differences, set aside your brotherly bickering, set aside your preferences, the things that make you comfortable? How much more so should you be willing and able to serve one another? He says, because if you think you're greater than that, if you think you're above that, if you think you are so good of a Christian that you don't have to do those greeter things, first impressions things that we give to the new people around here, like, you've totally missed it. Because serving in ministries like AV or beautification technician or the other things we're going to honor or the things that we forget to honor because we just... we're humans and we fail. He says, you've missed it. If the God of the universe can wash feet, how much more so can we serve one another? Can we minister to one another, preferring each other more than ourselves? And then verse 17, so if you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. What's happening here is as John is talking about Jesus, as God, as John is laying out for us who Jesus is, and he has given his come and see statements, what he's saying here is come see the one who serves, the God of the universe, who comes to serve people who are genuinely below him. John continues, if I am not speaking of all of you, I know whom I have chosen, because he knows that at least one at the table is not following him. It says, but the scripture will be fulfilled. He who ate my bread has lifted his heel against me. So Jesus is setting this up. This is a prophecy in the Old Testament that he is saying, once again, he's going to fulfill another Old Testament prophecy. He says, I am telling you this now before it takes place, that when it does take place, you may believe that I am he. He says, there's a prophecy. It's about to be fulfilled. I want you to see it in advance so that when it happens, it doesn't look like I'm trying to say, hey, remember that thing? That was a prophecy. He's saying, before it even happens, I'm telling you, this is what's about to happen. He says, so truly, truly, I say to you, whoever receives the one I send receives me. And whoever receives me receives the one who sent me. And after saying these things, Jesus was troubled in his spirit and testified, truly, truly, I say to you, one of you will betray me. This would have been another spot to put in the dramatic chipmunk, the dun, dun, dun. Jesus has just told his 12 most faithful, one of you is going to turn against me. One of you is going to stab me in the back. So the disciples looked at one another, uncertain of whom he spoke. And this is his second jab, and I love it. One of his disciples, whom Jesus loved, so one of the disciples Jesus loves a little bit more than the rest, was reclining at the table at Jesus' side. We don't really know who that is, but we have an idea. So Simon Peter mentioned to him to ask Jesus who he was speaking to. So we don't know who it is that Jesus loves more, but we know it's not Simon. Because John takes the chance to say, Simon, who's not the one that Jesus loved, mentions to him to ask Jesus who he was speaking about. So that disciple, who was leaning back against Jesus, says to him, Lord, who is it? And Jesus answered, it is he whom I will give this morsel of bread when I have dipped it. He said, remember that prophecy I just referenced about the one who gets the bread is the one who's going to betray me? It's that guy. I tried to tell you this already. He says, so when he had dipped the morsel, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. Then after he had taken the morsel, Satan entered into him. And Jesus said to him, what are you going to do? What you are going to do, do it quickly. Now, no one at the table knew why he said this to him. Some thought that because Judas had the money bag, Jesus was telling him, buy what you need for the feast, or that he should give something to the poor. So after receiving the morsel of bread, he immediately went out, and it was night. This passage has always kind of confused me. Because Jesus literally tells them, here's the prophecy, whoever gets the bread, that's the guy who's going to betray Jesus. And then Jesus says to John, whoever I give this piece of bread to, that's who's going to betray me. Then he gives the piece of bread to John, and John, or to, yeah, that would have been interesting. Judas, and says, go do what you got to do, and everybody at the table is still going, Who is it? Who could it possibly be? What's going on? But I think verse 27 is the key here. Because it was only after he had taken the bread, it was only after Jesus had handed him the bread that Satan, it says that Satan enters into him. I believe this indicates a change in Judas. That while he may have had inclinations in his heart, while he may have had designs or thoughts that maybe he would have, this is the point where he became committed to the direction he was going to take. This is the moment where he made up his mind, no, this isn't just going to be talk, I'm actually going to take action against my God. Which means up to this point, he was one of their brothers. Up to this point, he was one of the 12. He was one of the 12 who had walked with them, who had talked with them, who had shared housing with them, who had in every way been a part of them. They couldn't see it because they cared for him. They couldn't see it because he was a friend, and they never would have wanted to assume that any of them could have betrayed each other, much less Judas, he's our guy. And yet, at this moment, he gives in, and it changes everything in the story going forward. We're going to see more of that in the coming weeks, but for now, I want to ask the question, so what? So what is that service is our sign? If you study the book of James at all, you know that there is a steady argument, a steady discussion, a frustration over his statement that faith without works is dead, because everybody wants to debate and discuss and feud over, well, are you saying that we have to do something to earn our salvation? I thought it was free, a free gift from God. Or, but why would you not think you have to do something? And this back and forth, I'll say it very clearly. There is nothing you need to do to earn salvation. Salvation is a free gift from God. No strings attached. All you need to do is place your trust in him, your faith in him. Make a choice. Jesus, you are my Lord. I will follow you. But if you start following somebody, there will be signs. There will be things that happen that will kind of tell people around you, hey, you must be following somebody new. That happens when you follow somebody on Facebook. Like, when John Deloney became a thing, I started knowing pretty quickly who was and was not a follower of John Deloney. I heard about it all the time. There were signs who was following him and who wasn't. When it comes to being a follower of Jesus, the sign is your service. Your sign is that you become a part of this thing that we call church, that you participate, that you're here, that we know who you are invested and you are involved. And like Jesus, who is not above getting down on his hands and knees and washing feet, you prefer your brothers and sisters to yourself and you serve them in one capacity or another. One of the things I should say, you guys are great at this. This is not meant as a exhortation or trying to get you to do something new. It's more, we are honoring six today. All of you serve well around here. We could just go on and on. We could go person by person and thank you for your service. But that service is our sign as a follower of Jesus, because not a single one of us is greater than Jesus. Not a single one of us isn't broken. Jesus was perfect. Not a single one of us has ever created something out of nothing. God created the entire universe. Not a single one of us even is worthy of untying his shoelace, much less washing his feet. No one's greater than Jesus. So we together serve each other as a sign that we're serving him.